the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Mohler Program, broadcasting to you live today from Las Vegas, Nevada, here at Blog World and New Media Exposition. It's at the Las Vegas Convention Center. You'll be hearing the background noise here. We're broadcasting live from the exhibit hall. It's going to be a very interesting event here. I had the honor of giving the keynote address this morning to a group of Christian bloggers involved in new media, and it is fascinating to be surrounded by so many people. One of them is going to be joining us in just a few moments for the second segment, the remainder of the program, Dr. John Mark Reynolds, who is head of the Torrey Honors Program at Biola University. He will be here in just a moment, and then I'll be joining Hugh Hewitt for his program immediately following my own, also to be broadcast live here from the exhibit hall at Blog World in Las Vegas, Nevada. Needless to say, this is a fascinating place to be. I started out my address this morning by speaking of the anomaly of having a Southern Baptist evangelical in Las Vegas. The sheer artificiality of this place simply staggers the mind. The whole city, now the fastest growing city in America, based in gambling and in the entertainment business, and much of that the least attractive aspects of the entertainment business. It's really interesting. We'll be talking about that a bit in a few moments with my guest, Dr. John Mark Reynolds. First, to review some issues in the news. At my website at albertmohler.com, you'll find an article posted just in the last day entitled Amazing Awakenings, Will the Nation's Conscience Be Awakened Too? Let me tell you what it's about. You have been hearing for some time controversy. Well, just think back to the Terry Schiavo case in Florida, and you'll remember that there was much discussion about persons who are profoundly cognitively impaired. You may have heard things such as a persistent vegetative state. The insinuation of many in the medical community and even the prevailing wisdom in the medical community is that persons who have that diagnosis and are in such a state cannot recover. Wesley J. Smith, reporting in the Weekly Standard, tells us that that is simply not the case. I want you to hear the first of his case studies. This is found in the current edition of the Weekly Standard. You can link to it by going to my website at albertmohler.com. Listen to this. On October 19, only months after being nearly dehydrated to death when his feeding tube was removed, Jesse Ramirez walked out of the Barrow Neurological Institute in Phoenix on his own two legs. Ramirez is lucky to be alive. Early last June, a mere 1 week after a serious auto accident left him unconscious, his wife Rebecca and doctors decided he would never recover and pulled his feeding tube. He went without food and water for 5 long days, but then his mother, Teresa, represented by lawyers from the Arizona-based Alliance Defense Fund, successfully took Rebecca to court demanding a change of guardianship on the grounds that Rebecca and Jesse's alleged rocky marriage disqualified her for the role. Now, that's the end of his first statement, his first case study, but just take this and let's understand what happened. Here was a man who was being starved and dehydrated to death because he was judged to be in an irrecoverable brain damage situation. And instead now he walked out back in October the 19th, walked out of his own place of hospitalization, the Barrow Neurological Institute. The second case is of a little girl by the name of Haley Potry. She was suffering terrible child abuse, and the people who were supposed to be protecting her actually harmed her. She was hospitalized in the wake of a beating. The Massachusetts Department of Public Social Services, acting on doctor's solemn assurances that she was virtually brain dead, requested permission to remove her from her respirator and remove the feeding tube. But it so happens that Haley is also still alive. She has begun to exhibit signs of awareness. She picked up a stuffed duck when requested. And even though her exact condition is not now known because she is a minor, media reports indicate she's awake and able to eat food. And now the last of these is really interesting. This was reported back last year, but it's just now getting out in a lot of media sources, and that is that scientists did a test on a woman who was supposed to be unconscious and deeply irrecoverably unconscious, and they did measurements discovering, number one, that this woman, knowing in the background that she played tennis, they found out which areas of the brain are excited about playing tennis. They then spoke to her, suggesting that she think about playing tennis, and that area of the brain lit up in the neurological test. What does that tell you? It tells you that doctors really don't know a whole lot about these persons who have suffered a very severe cognitive impairment, and even those in a persistent vegetative state, and it just may not be that it is as we've been told. Apologies there to Terry Schiavo, as we know, on the nation's conscience, because who knows if she might have recovered if only given the same opportunities as these others. Dehydrating and starving persons in these conditions is simply not an ethical option. Other issues in the news include the fact that various news sources reported over the last 2 days that the Chinese organizers of the 2008 Olympic Games had decided that athletes could not have Bibles in the Olympic Park, the Olympic Village. That report came out. It was picked up by several media sources. It turns out it was false. And when something like that gets talked about in Christian circles and is assumed to be true, and when we find out it's false, we need to say so. So you have a report now coming up from the Associated Press that the U.S. Olympic Committee is denying that there was such an order or ever was such an order, and ensuring that there will be no restrictions on Bibles being brought into the Olympic Village in Beijing next year. Now, the Chinese are obviously very sensitive about this, given the fact that they are a communist government. The fact that they are holding the Olympics is testing many of their limitations. In fact, it's testing their entire worldview. And yet it appears that they were not trying to keep Bibles out of the Olympic Village. Several of the Global South archbishops, that is especially the archbishops from Africa of the Anglican Communion, are calling for a postponement of next year's Lambeth Conference of the Anglican Bishops because they say that they simply are not ready because they will not meet with those who are directly in violation of the Scripture. They're calling for the bishops to meet only when they can meet in a spirit of true collegiality and unity in the faith. Now, one of these archbishops we have cited often is Archbishop Akinola, who in his letter to the church's primates, he, by the way, is the primate of Nigeria. This is what he had to say. The world needs to understand that the situation that we now confront is not primarily about structure or conferences, but about irreconcilable truth claims. It is worth remembering that in the biblical narratives, religious structures have often been the enemy of revealed truth. That's a very brave statement coming from a very brave man. What he is saying here is what we need to keep very much in mind, that when you have a church such as the Episcopal Church USA defying Scripture, it's not just a matter of etiquette. It's not a matter of who can come to the meeting and feel good about it. It's a matter as to whether the meeting can have any sense whatsoever if some persons believe the gospel is one thing and others come believing it's something very, very different. People are going to be watching the Episcopal Diocese of Chicago on Saturday. At the end of this week, the diocese is to elect a new bishop. What makes this remarkable is that the list of candidates, the list of eight candidates, includes a lesbian priest, the Reverend Tracy Lind. Now, you'll recall that one of the demands made by the Anglican Communion is that the American Church would cease and desist from the election of future or further openly gay bishops. The Church said that they would try to exercise restraint, but here you have one of their largest units, the Episcopal Diocese of Chicago, poised, at least possibly, to act in direct defiance of this just in upcoming days, the end of this week, on Saturday. You may know already that the United States House of Representatives has passed ENDA. It was passed by a significant vote, 235-4. That included 200 Democrats and 35 Republicans across the aisle to join in supporting this. The bill goes back to 1974 when Representatives Edward I. Koch and Bella Abzug. Bella Abzug's now dead. Ed Koch later became, of course Mayor Koch of New York City. That tells you something when you're looking more than 30 years back to the origins of this bill and the gay rights movement. Those of us who've been watching this closely know that this is a very dangerous piece of legislation because it calls for homosexual orientation, sexual orientation, to be included among those issues protected now by non-discrimination law at the federal level. Now, that's passed by the House of Representatives. The Senate is poised to take it up. And in the Senate, you have Senator Edward M. Kennedy, the Democrat, who is intending to be the sponsor of a similar measure in the Senate, and Senator Susan Collins, Republican of Maine, who says she will be the lead co-sponsor. Now, what's very, very interesting about this is that there are protests about the passage of this legislation coming not only from people who believe it's wrong to include sexual orientation in such a non-discrimination law, but people from the homosexual left who are saying it simply doesn't go far enough. In particular, it does not include transgendered and transsexual persons. And so there were protests even yesterday and continuing today in places such as the San Francisco Bay Area. John Newsom, co-founder of And Castro for All, Castro is the homosexual district there in San Francisco, says people are livid. At the first step out of the gate leaves people behind. It is an inconceived first step. Cecilia Chung, deputy director of the Transgender Law Center there, said, "We're disappointed that this version is not all-inclusive. We're happy for our lesbian and gay brothers and sisters and understand we are making progress, but we feel there's still a lot of work to be done." We'll be tracking that issue with you, and we're broadcasting today live from the Convention Center here in Las Vegas. It is Blog World. I'll be back with my special guest, Dr. John Mark Reynolds, in just a moment, coast to coast and with listeners around the world. This is the Albert Mueller Program. Folks, I'll just come right out and say it. Las Vegas is a very strange place for someone like me to be. I mean, everything about this just screams. Life is about entertainment. Life is about gambling. Let me tell you, when you get off the plane in Las Vegas, the first thing you see are government-sponsored slot machines. The government here wants you gambling before even the casino owners can get you. And the whole way the thing is set up, if you're just going to dinner in one of these places, I'm here for a convention. It is known as Blog World. It's about new media. I was here for a special part of it, which is about Christian blogging. And yet, if you just want to go to dinner, you got to walk through these casinos. And the casinos are arranged like a maze so that you have to be walking in between. You have to have all these tantalizing opportunities if you're tantalized by such things. And the promise of the good life. And then at night, the city is just an absolute ocean of artificiality with all the neon and the flashing lights and all the rest. And it is just, to me, so sad, to tell you the truth. It'll almost make a postmodernist out of you when you start looking at the socially constructed reality and you start to say, wow, you know, this really is kind of a symbol of everything wrong with what human beings do when human beings think they're creating meaning and having fun. But the reason I'm here is for this Blog World Convention, especially for the meeting of Christian bloggers. I had the opportunity to give a keynote address this morning to this group, and it's fascinating that as this convention is here talking about new media, there are some seriously minded Christians here thinking about how to use these new media for the glory of God and for the gospel. With me here at the exhibit booth at Blog World 2007 is Dr. John Mark Reynolds, who's head of the Tory Honors Program at Biola University. John Mark, thanks for gathering.
I'm utterly excited to be here, though I have to say, if it's weird for you to be in Las Vegas, the two of us being here together, this is probably unprecedented in the history of Vegas. The cultural uncoolness by Vegas standards, we have hit the red line. Well, by ourselves.
That's probably why they have us here in this exhibit hall, way away from the strip here in Las Vegas. But it is great to have you here, John Mark. And
it's great
you
to
do
be
have
here.
The Tory Honors Program. We're going to be talking about that, kind of talking about the vision that that drives that very significant program that I'm a big believer in there at Biola. But I also want us just to talk about what it means to be here. And before we get to the Blog World Convention, what does this whole experience of Las Vegas say to you?
Well, I think the most interesting thing to do is to look at people in casinos. And what you see, and you can compare it to looking at missionaries over the course of their life. I see a lot of those at Biola. And what you see is that people who are in their 20s in Las Vegas look like they're having a great time, and they all look really different, and they dress carefully. And then people about my age, about 40, start to look a lot the same. And by the time they get to be 60, they look exactly the same. Depravity has reduced them into kind of a drooling vegetative state where they're sitting in front of a slot machine staring at it. Whereas if you look at missionaries, they look the most alike when they're in their 20s. They all look eager and ready to go and change the world for Jesus. And they become wonderfully, eccentrically good and noble and cool looking when they're in their 70s and 80s to talk to. So I think sin and depravity has the opposite effect on people as a righteous life. It turns you into a drone, whereas living for God brings forth the weirdness and uniqueness of each human being.
You know, one of the interesting things to me, and I was having dinner last night with some folks and just being driven along the strip to get back to my hotel, every one of these casinos and every other attraction, however you might want to label it here in Las Vegas, is having to work hard to get people in.
Yeah.
And so they're projecting a picture of why you should come in, and whether it's the Bellagio with its incredible riches or whether it's kind of the more traditional low entry level things here in Las Vegas, they're
right.
All trying
like
to say,
like the 7-Eleven.
That's right. If you will just come in, you're going to find the good life. Right. It just seems so sad to me that evidently it works or they wouldn't be doing this.
Okay, but let me volley back to you. My fear is that the church is too often adopting Las Vegas methodology to get people to come to church. What do people want? What can we do to get them? When we get them in there, how can we manipulate them to stay? As opposed to the early church, which made, okay, here's the hard thing. Here's theology. You have to know it. Here's what you have to do to be catechized. One thing you can learn from Vegas is that a lot of Vegas has infected the church.
Yeah, that's actually where I was headed, and I appreciate you pointing us right there in the deep end of the pool, because when you start looking at this, it's all about marketing, and it's about presenting something as if you just walk through this door, you're going to have this experience. If you'll just come in here, you're going to be happy. And, you know, there is simply no demand. There's no one standing outside a casino saying, you're more likely to lose money than to win money.
Yeah, that's right.
Or you should see the people that leave here having to mortgage their house or sell their car, or whose family is going without food because of this. And you just realize it's all marketing. And if ever there was an illustration to me of the limitations of marketing, this is it.
Yeah, we're a religion of the cross, not a Prozac. We're a religion of pain, where instead of telling people, hey, come to Jesus, all your problems will be solved, when I walked away from Christ, and I had a period of time in my life where I did, I actually apparently had fewer problems. When I came back to Christ, I had to face the fact that I was a sinner. I had to face the fact that I had done terrible things to people and done harmful things that maybe the culture wouldn't have said. And so I had to go through sort of enormous pain. And then there was healing, hope, and reconciliation in Jesus Christ. But it didn't come on my terms. It didn't come because I was cool or somebody told me I was special, like every casino tells you. You're good looking, you're attractive, you're young. I'm not young, I'm not good looking, I'm not attractive. And Jesus comes to me where I am in the mud and picks me up and heals me there. And that's something a casino is never going to tell you.
Well, that's reality. The reality of our need and the reality of God's provision and the reality of the only way of salvation. And there isn't going to be any happiness. Even the saddest thing is you can come here and actually win.
Yes.
And, of course, lose.
Yeah. What I find when I talk to people is that the saddest people I know are the people who get their dream. Because if you don't get your dream, you spend your whole life thinking, oh, if I only won the lottery, if I only had more money, if I'd only been the starting place kicker for the Green Bay Packers, which was my big dream, hey, maybe it'll still happen, that I'd be happy. And so we can live that way. But if you get your dream, you're the starting place kicker for the Packers, you're a Hall of Fame football player, eventually you discover, while that didn't make me happy, now what do I live for?
And the now answer, I've got no excuse for not being happy.
Yeah, that's right.
I
have a ton of money. You know, I had, in my case, I'm a male, so all the women, were there. I'm a big football player, and now I'm not happy. So people I've known in athletics, in business, in academics. You know, in my life, the big pursuit was, oh, I'll get a PhD from a major university. That will make me cool, smart, and special. So you get there and you discover, wow, I'm in a really good secular program, but I'm mediocre inside that. So I better go and get another degree from another major university. And all we're doing is hiding and covering up the deep sin problem that all of us face.
Well, we are here in Las Vegas. It's pretty undeniable. It's all around us.
Not a lot of things covered up in Las Vegas, except for sin. Sin is covered up.
That's about right. So why in the world is John Mark Reynolds here in Las Vegas?
Well, I think the most important reason is when Hollywood was started in the teens and 20s, when anybody could get in for almost no money, when Frank Baum of Wizard of Oz fame came out and started a studio and tried to make Oz movies, Christians mostly stood on the sideline and said, wow, there are going to be horrible cultural consequences of all these films. And that was right. There were horrible consequences, but we could have bought a studio, we could have been involved, and instead of getting involved in the mainstream, we ghettoized ourselves and didn't get involved. We don't want to make that mistake again.
And you're speaking particularly of new media. The name of this big trade exposition out here is Blog World. It's interesting to me to ponder that just a decade ago, no one would have known what in the world we were talking about, much less would there have been the expectation that there could be a trade show in which thousands of people will be showing up, exhibitors will be filling a hall. The big question for us as Christians is, what do we do with this? What do we think of these new media? How do we respond? And if we decide to enter this world of new media, as obviously many of us have, otherwise we wouldn't be here, the big question is, how do we do it in a way that is appropriate for Christian truth, the Christian gospel, and for Christian involvement? My guest today is Dr. John Mark Reynolds of Biola University. This is the Albert Miller Program, broadcasting to you live from Las Vegas, Nevada. And we'll be right back.
listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get on the line, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com and email your questions and comments. Here again is your guest host, Dr. Russell Moore.
No, actually, this is Dr. Albert Mohler here broadcasting live from Las Vegas, Nevada.
I thought I was sitting with Al Mohler, and
yeah,
I'm not.
I just
That's
got
really
morphed into someone else right there by someone pushing the wrong button. But
it's
nonetheless,
postmodernism has seized the show.
But we're here at the Blog World Convention, and obviously the word implies this is about new media, in particular blogging. 10 years ago, it really didn't exist. In my keynote address today, I kind of walked through how this happened, the development of new technologies, and the development especially of the kind of software that would allow this. Now you have this explosion. Some people say that by 2010 there'll be 50 million blogs. What does that say to you?
It says to me that we're not going to be doing things the way we were when I was growing up. And I'm not Russell Moore either, by the way. I'm John Mark Reynolds from Biola University. But what we're going to be doing is getting our news, getting our information, getting our entertainment delivered through an internet pipeline. We're not going to have to wait around to hear the things we want to hear or do the things we want to do. It's nice to be on a convention floor. We probably strange things going through the air.
You know, it's probably a good thing we have no idea what they're saying.
Yeah,
we're just going to keep
exactly
talking.
Right.
You know, here we are in Las Vegas. We're surrounded by all these people involved in blogging. And let's just define that for a moment. Again, my guest is Dr. John Mark Reynolds, head of the Torrey Honors Program at Biola University. Blogging is the act of putting up an internet web blog, and when it first began, people thought this might be interesting as a way of involving, what, a few thousand, maybe a couple million people in an online conversation. Now you're looking at roughly one-third of all the inhabitants of the world being involved in some kind of blog involvement, whether it's writing, reading, managing, or something. What does that say to you?
Well, I think it's going to have to change the way we interact with people, because a lot of people have a blog. It lasts for a little while. It doesn't last for a little while. And what they're doing is sort of like the old family newsletter. They're putting up news about their family. They're putting up news about their personal life. But then what they don't realize is that, in principle, Google can put that news in front of every living person on the planet. So there have been people who had interesting things to say who are just discovered, and suddenly they become a commentator with as big an audience on any given evening as a local news channel or a local newspaper. I grew up in Charleston, West Virginia, or near Charleston, West Virginia, until I was 8 or 9. And some of those small-town newspapers would feel really good if they had 10,000, 12,000, 15,000 readers. My blog, if I have a good post on a good day, I'm not like you with a radio show, I might draw 20, 30,000 people reading a post if you count all the people who are reading it on other sites. That means I'm publishing a paper that sometimes gets read by as many people as the small-town newspapers in my childhood.
Well, that's one of the reasons I give so much attention to the weblog at albertmohler.com. It's simply because I can say things there. And not only do I have the potential to reach a lot of people who go and are directed there, but it's also archived, so I can have people go back again and again and again. It becomes an ongoing conversation. And
it's eternal. One person who writes on our blog, Scriptorium Daily, is the fantastic Christian apologist, J.P. Moreland. When people Google Jesus, one of the pages that comes up is J.P. Moreland's homepage. We like to tease him that, in fact, he's Jesus in disguise, or the second coming occurred secretly. But no, really what it is he writes a lot about Jesus. He has this whole reservoir of decades worth of apologetic work we're starting to put on the net. And now people can read that. He can minister to hundreds of people a day without ever leaving his house or stopping his day job.
Now, I love what one person calls the whole blogging community, calls it the pajama hadeen.
Yes,
you know,
that's
all
exactly
these,
right.
These people, because in the old media, one of the things I did in my address this morning was contrast old media and new media. And you could spend all day doing this. But one of the things is old media was highly controlled. When you're talking about newspapers, book publishing, film, radio and television, it was very expensive to get into. And basically, it was the province of fairly old people. I mean, by the time you got to be the anchor of the CBS Evening News, you were kind of at, you know, the advanced career stage.
Yeah, and your reporting days were done. You weren't particularly, I mean, Dan Rather tried to do some reporting later in life, but pretty much you were reading a teleprompter. And the new experts, here's what's wonderful. If an issue comes up in the culture, like, could this typewriter write this memo? We think of Rathergate. There is an expert in that particular field somewhere in America. They can put it in their blog. That blog will briefly become famous, and the cultural conversation can change.
One of the things we need to talk about, though, is one of the real senses of urgency, I think, that draws both of us here, and that is there anything distinctive about the way a Christian should involve himself in the blogosphere, the way a Christian would approach this
absolutely.
New media? When we come back, we're going to talk about that. And one of the things we need to think about is the fact that we are really responsible for the stewardship of this new opportunity, much like looking at a new world. Are we going to go there or not? Mm-hmm. Christians have pretty much decided we've got to go. The question is now, what do we do in order truly to glorify Christ as we go? This is the Albert Miller Program. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Albert Miller Program, an audio version of my address given here at Blog World to a group of Christian bloggers. It'll be up at my website as soon as we can get that ready, along with the text. But it is interesting to be here with so many people who are trying to really think through the issues involved in how to look at this this whole world of new media. My guest today is John Mark Reynolds, who is himself a blogger. He is also head of the Torrey Honors Program at Biola University. You know, John Mark, when you start thinking about how a Christian should approach this, I used two metaphors this morning. I said we need to consider it as the Wild Wild West, because there is no sheriff out there.
Right.
You don't have the editors, the producers, and all the rest that have really been the gatekeepers of media. And so I think there are some who are, frankly, as Christians, being irresponsible in the blogosphere.
Well, they are being irresponsible because we forget that just because I can write a thing doesn't mean I should write a thing. Just because I can hurt somebody with my words doesn't mean I should. And so, you know, I've been blogging for years now, and there are posts that I have to look at back in the past, and everything on the Internet is forever, that I'm ashamed I wrote. And unfortunately, unlike giving a talk or a sermon where you say, I wish I hadn't said that, I'm kind of stuck with that. It's like the rhyme of the Ancient Mariner, the albatross stuck around your neck.
Right.
Only the Internet never forgives you. You're stuck with that albatross forever.
And I think the medium is evolving.
Yes.
I think, for one thing, you know, one of the points I wanted to make this morning, didn't have time, was that new media begins to act like old media.
Yes.
And at some point, certain credibility tests are falling into place. I mean, even now, there are blogs dying some days about as fast as others are being born. Even though the blogosphere is expanding, there's some people who just aren't up to it. They're not putting the responsible thought into it. You know, one of the rules I gave this morning was, you know, be intellectually credible, but be theologically credible. Don't be a heretic.
Well, one of the things I said to the group, and your talk was the perfect keynote, because both of those things you said have been a big problem inside the Christian new media area. The other thing is, people should talk less about themselves and talk more about other things while letting their self show. It's what C.S. Lewis said about friendship. Two friends sit together, they talk about a football game, they talk about NASCAR, they talk about philosophy and Plato. It's something external, then the friendship can grow. Too much of the new media has been my emo poetry about how sad I am, forwards and backwards. I have to be blunt with you. I'm afraid that too much of this is creeping into theological education and into Christian education, where it becomes what a student wants to talk about, how this relates to me, not the kind of soul-expanding confrontation with the gospel, confrontation with the Word of God and great thinkers, out of which you can develop the emotions and the life of the heart and the passion that enable you to engage with the real world.
Well, some of the problems I think we have are that people, some of them are posting blogs anonymously.
Yes.
And, of course, there's no credibility or accountability there. Some are also just, demonstrating snarkiness. That's a word that I don't think existed until recently. But it's kind of a combination of attitude and sarcasm.
What do you mean by that? I mean, the cheapest kind of humor, which I was just humorously trying to demonstrate, is making fun of something. And more in our culture, which I think is less postmodern than post-literate. I mean, most of what people call postmodernity or new thinking, my granddaddy would have described as being stupid and being badly educated. We've just developed a new vocabulary to describe our illiteracy and bad education. And so a lot of people who are post-literate, they're not very well educated, what they do when they get to an idea they don't understand and they can't respond is they say, whatever, or you're old, or some version of cheap insults.
Right. Or you also have a lot of these blogs that basically just make snappy remarks about what other arguments have been offered, rather than offering any sustained intellectual argument of their own.
Yeah, and look, it's wrong. It's not okay to be funny and amusing and wicked and uncharitable. And to tell you the truth, as a guy who grew up on Monty Python, a guy who grew up on parody, a little parody goes a long way. If you watch a whole weekend of sarcastic stuff, you're going to have a bad week with your family and your wife. Yes, Jesus used wit. Yes, he used sarcasm. This is a point you made in the talk. And I thought what was so powerful in what you said is a little goes a long way. And yet there are whole blogs totally dedicated to kind of destructive humor.
Well, there are moments, which I tried to acknowledge today, where the only proper response is a snarky kind of sarcastic response. And you see Jesus do that from time to time.
Right.
But it is very rare. I mean, you know, what you have in Jesus more than anything else is a pastoral and prophetic word,
yes.
The didactic and teaching word. So, and I just think we need to take that as an example. I want to come back to one other thing, which is that it is also not only the wild, wild west, I called it, but I think you have, through your ministry and your engagement, also helped to demonstrate it is a mission field. We should look at it as a way to reach persons who desperately need the gospel.
You know, there are two principles in the Bible, both of which everybody tries to avoid. The first is holiness, or separation from the world. And in a place like Vegas, you're really reminded of that. We're called to come out of her and be separate, a holy people unto God. But sometimes then the people who become holy forget another mandate of the gospel is to reconcile the world to Christ. It's to take the crooked and make it straight, to proclaim the lordship of Jesus Christ in every area, in every sphere of authority. And so in the new media, often you either get people who are so accommodated to the culture that when Hollywood makes a movie trying to insult Christians, they still like it and aren't insulted. That's how accommodated they are. Or they're so narrow they can see down a straw with both eyes, and so they can't come to the culture and make anything good come of it.
Let's talk about the Torrey Honors Program at Biola University. Tell me about that, and how did it come about?
Well, if Jesus had needed an educational program for the rich young ruler, the rich young ruler had sold all that he had and followed Jesus, we'd like to think that this is what we're trying to do. We're not Jesus, but as disciples of Christ, with intellectually rich young men and women who, instead of pursuing, as they could, more prestigious education, pursue real education through mentorship, through discipleship, centered in the Word of God.
So what do you actually do that makes this different than any other, say, Christian undergraduate program?
Well, first of all, what we don't do is hide students from the most difficult questions that are being asked. But unlike a lot of places who say that, oh, we don't hide students, we don't have an agenda trying to help the students outgrow their parents' faith. So simultaneously, we want students to wrestle with non-biblical ideas and think them through, but we don't have a secret agenda of liberalizing all the students we're handed.
Well, I think that secret agenda is the dirty secret that an awful lot of institutions are hiding from parents. Send your kids, pay the tuition money, and we'll call ourselves a Christian institution, but when your kid gets here, he's actually going to discover it could be something very, very different.
Yeah, we actually mean inerrancy when we talk about it, which is not always true in Christian higher education.
Speaking there especially of the inerrancy of Scripture, still the watershed issue in terms of knowing what, after all, is true. Back of final thoughts in just a moment. Broadcasting today live from the Las Vegas Convention Center in Las Vegas, Nevada, this is the Albert Mueller Program. Cognitive dissonance and cultural alienation, that's what I'm feeling here in Las Vegas, Nevada. Actually, I'm here for the Blog World Convention. My guest today has been John Mark Reynolds of Biola University. You know, Professor Reynolds, when I talk about the coming generation, I mention that even though it's the least evangelized generation in about a century of American life, at least, and even though there are many issues there that would concern us, I'm just amazed at how many bright, committed young people there are in this generation who are deeply committed to Christianity.
Yeah, we end up with twice as many applicants as we have space, and we're a program that's doing something that doesn't meet anybody's felt need. There's nobody out there at 16 thinking, if only I could grow up to read the Iliad and the Odyssey for my first 2 weeks of college, and then compare them to the Bible in intensive Socratic discussion while I write papers people are beating up on. Instead, students are looking for authenticity. They're looking for something real. They're sick of edutainment, and they want somebody to say to them, we're not going to be your guru, we're not going to be your leader, we want to bring you to a living confrontation with God, who's goodness, truth, and beauty, and then we want you to become a believer yourself, to produce content. Godblog, the convention here, is totally organized and run by Tory students. And that doesn't mean they did all the hard work. It means the director is a current student in our program. We gave them a budget. They did all the work. I supervised it very little. And that's the kind of leadership, hands-on training we try to provide our students.
Well, they've done a great job here. And I really think it's a worthwhile endeavor because I don't know of any other forum where you're going to have Christians gather together to talk about the stewardship of the opportunity of the Internet and new media.
Well, things are changing really quickly. You said something in your talk today that just blew my mind. You said the iPod is only 5 years old. Is that right?
That's right.
Well, I surveyed my students as they came in the door this year, and I think none of them had ever purchased a CD. They viewed CDs as old technology. They had no idea what to do with one if you handed them one. They didn't even have a player, many of them, except for their computers to put it in.
And even though there are a lot of people listening to this program live right now, there are many who listen to it by podcast and by download, MP3, because this is a generation that frankly, as we also talked about earlier this morning, is involved in multitasking and multi-phased engagement with the media.
I am convinced that Christianity can win in the marketplace of ideas, that Christianity is true, that the biblical message will prevail in the end. We're always losing to somebody, just somebody new, but we have to be there. We have to be in the Wild West. Like those Sunday school teachers that came into the Wild West and brought the gospel.
Well said. Now tell folks how they can find out more about the Tory Honors Program at Biola.
If they go to biola.edu and look for the Tory Honors Institute, they'll find us, or Google my name, John Mark Reynolds, and they'll find our website.
Well, you have heard Professor John Mark Reynolds. You understand why it's such an engaging program there, and would encourage you to take a look at it. Folks, it's been good for you to join us today. We are broadcasting live from Las Vegas, Nevada, and in just a few moments, I'm going to be joining my Salem colleague, Hugh Hewitt, for his program, so stay tuned. It'll be a fascinating discussion. See you next time for Intelligent Christian Conversation. I'm Albert Moeller.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Moeller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.